Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's PPSC PDP call on Monday, the 24th of January, we have Jeff Newman, James Bladel, Avery Doria, Alan Greenberg from staff. We have Marika Konings, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies today noted from David Maher, Alex Gakuru, and Tony Harris. If I could please just remind you to state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Thank you. It is our first Monday call in a long time. In fact, it may be our first Monday call, certainly this year, but this is the PDP work team. It is the 24th of January, and today's agenda really is to just go over the couple comments that have been filed to date on the draft final report from Avery and from James and Paul, and I know others are still getting comments in, but we're kind of getting towards the need to do another draft final that Marika is working on. And Marika actually has merged the documents together, so what you see on the top left for people in Adobe is a merged document that contains the comments both from Avery and from Paul and James. And on the right, you see the top right, you see the outstanding issues list that we've been working on for the last several weeks. And so I think that looking at them side by side should help us out in the discussion. Marika already has her hand raised, so I'll call Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just want to highlight as well that what I've done in the document on the right-hand side, the outstanding issues document, the issues that I've added there are those that, in my view, were deemed as substantial issues where the working group might or the work team might want to discuss in further detail the comments made. There are some other edits that have been made by Avery and James and Paul that, in my view, were more editing, clarifying changes. So I would encourage the members of the work team to also look through the document on the left-hand side for those issues that haven't been added to the outstanding issues list, and if there are any items where they feel that they should require further discussions, then they let me know so I can actually add them to the list.
Okay. So with that said, then let's jump into the comments. And I just want to actually, before we jump in, I just want to double check. So we don't have anyone from the commercial stakeholder group on this. Sorry, is that the BS? Yeah, the commercial, the BC, the ISP, or the IP. There's no one from those groups on the call? Okay, hearing no one. I'm just going to note that down and mention it on the list of the council list because it's been a while since we've seen anyone from the IPC and. From the BC, we had John Berard for a call, but I don't think he's shown up since that one call.
Just means they trust us.
we'll let the record reflect that Alan believes they trust us.
Sorry, yes, that was Alan speaking.
but it didn't pass the giggle test.
All right, so it could be possible that... We just forgot there was a Monday call, or we're checking their mail. So we'll see what happens on Thursday. Okay, so let's jump into it. Marika is going to help guide us through this one because I have yet to be able to look completely at Avery's comments as we got them on Friday. I've looked through Paul and James's comments, but Marika, why don't you kind of lead us to the first issue? And then we'll have, if it's Avery's, we'll have Avery speak a little bit about it. And if it's James or Paul's, we'll let James speak to it if he can.
Okay, so this is Marika. So on the left-hand document, we'll be start on page 3, and on the right-hand document, we'll be on page 15. So the first comment is from Avery, and it's more an overall comment in relation to what should be in the executive summary. So Avery, want to speak to that one?
Sure. Executive summaries, I guess, I mean, a 21-page executive summary, and I understand what's happening, seemed a bit excessive to me. And really, there were two issues I had. One is it's excessively long for an executive summary that's just supposed to basically summarize it, and not go through every single point, otherwise it gets really long. But then it seemed like we almost had, after those 21 pages, and then we moved into the next section of approach taken, it seemed almost like it was repeating everything again. And I know that there were some differences. So this was really a comment about the construction of the document, sort of recommending that there be an executive summary that is within the limit of the 1 to 2 page, and that we find a slightly different way to, one, in some place, just cleanly list all the recommendations without any extra discussion, and then, two, have the approach taken type of section that includes all the discussions and how we got to the recommendation and how we treated the comments that we received, and how this was affected by the resolutions and the outstanding issues or overriding issues or whatever we want to call them, considerations, and how they relate to each other. So that was, how they relate to question this and question that. But at the moment, the executive summary, just like my talk about it, too long, and then too repetitive to the next section that it's really hard to tell why you have both of them. At least that was my, editorial-type view on it.
Hey, James?
Thanks, Jeff. James speaking. I tend to agree with Avery's assessment. It's something that Paul and I discussed, although I don't think it made it over to our comment that we submitted. But I understand exactly what's going on here, is that we understand in ICANN people are pressed for time and they only read the executive summary, so we don't want to leave anything out. But the final result is that the executive summary and then the next section approach taken are very duplicative, and perhaps the executive summary can be compressed. So just wanted to lend my agreement there.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And Alan?
Yeah, I'm going to do the same thing, but even stronger. I'm one of the ones who hasn't made their comments yet on this, but I did finish yesterday the Pedner comments, or did go through, and it struck me that all GNSR reports are getting awful large and unwieldy. In the name of completeness, we tend to put everything in excruciating detail and then often repeat it with slight variations in section to section. And the end result is I think people just don't read them at all. So the result of a 21-page executive summary means even the executive summary won't get read, I think. So I think we really have to cut these things back and put things in appendixes and annexes for someone who wants all the details, but make the salient material that we're really trying to get across much more accessible. So I support any activities, any action that'll end up with that result. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like everyone is kind of in agreement on the executive summary being a little bit too long. And listening to you all, but also to, I know, a comment that was made to the working group work team final report, that was made prior to the and during the resolution that was passed by the council, which was to get a 1 or 2 pager together. I'm not sure we can do a 1 or 2 pager on the recommendations here, but certainly to the extent we could pick out the major recommendations, and to the extent we don't have to necessarily follow this format of having each issue numbered, maybe just to summarize a few of the important highlights, we could do in the executive summary. We could do that. Now, one of our recommendations, and then I'll go to Marika, one of our recommendations as the PDP work team was to make sure that all recommendations or proposals are put out in the executive summary. If you go to, I can't remember what section of the report is, well, obviously it's a section of the report that deals with the product or the output, but we do talk about all recommendations being put up front so that people could read them, although here they're kind of long, so maybe there's just a different way we could organize it, or without restating it so much explanation. So we'll take a look at that. Marika, do you have another comment?
Yeah, this is Marika. You already partly made my point, because indeed what we try to do in the executive summary is really literally reproduce actual recommendations that are going to be acted upon, so people know what's being discussed and what's on the table. Of course, here it's hard because you're looking at, over 40 recommendations. So, we need to make then a balance of which recommendations we do capture, which we don't, and making sure that people do look at the whole list. And another issue I wanted to highlight is that is also the understanding that the part of the document that will get translated is the executive summary. So there you'll lose as well. If you only capture part of the recommendations, it might be a challenge for those that want to review the translated version, that they miss out on some of the other stuff that is not available in the translated version. So just for the work team to take that into consideration as well.
Okay. How weird would it be to have an executive summary and then followed by a couple pages of recommendations followed by the full report? Or would that be just too strange? I don't know. Alan and then Avery?
Sorry, my hand was up from before, but that may be strange, but it may be the effective way to do it. And I'll take my hand down now.
Okay, Avery?
Yeah, one thing that would shorten it, first of all, having all the recommendations in the executive summary, we may want to actually look at that, and we may want to have all the recommendations right after the executive summary. One thing that we can do is, I don't know that we need the questions. So, I mean, that's not a lot, but that already allows us to make it a table of recommendations or something, as opposed to the thing having all these things that said the answer to this, see recommendation such and such. That, I mean, that doesn't shorten a lot, but it makes it somewhat more dissimilar than the discussion part later. I understand the desire to get the recommendations up front. But it may be even possible, as you were saying, to shorten them and perhaps eliminating the questions and just listing the recommendations to be made. And if the recommendation wording doesn't stand on its own without the question, then perhaps the recommendation needs a slight rewording to do so. And perhaps even in some of the recommendations, there's extra wording in terms of explanation. So dividing the actual recommendation from some of the explanation and leaving the explanation later. The other thing that I wrote inside the comments is one thing that I have found useful is it's not only a long executive summary that's going to put people off. It's you download an 80-page document, and even before you've jumped into it, you go, oh, my God, I got to wait until I've got 3 hours to read this, as opposed to let me jump into it. And one of the things that I think may be helpful and may help in terms of translation division is to come out with short documents that have the essence with a longer document that is the companion document, as it were, that has all the gory detail, all the explanations of how we got there, all the responses, all the comments made and the responses to comments. So that you've got both the, here's the meat that people need to know at in a minimal structure, and here's all the gory detail you need to know everything about everything that went on, and that those two together make. And if we got into that kind of mode, that might actually help the document and help people read it. Because if they see a 15-page document, that's good. And they're more likely to set aside the time to read it. Thanks.
Right. And one thing I was going to say, too, is that, we're very good writers here at Newstar, or Newstar, sorry, at ICANN. And, we tend to write in full sentences in legalese when we don't necessarily have to. So perhaps we can just shorten words or just do a couple words instead of full, complete sentences. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Another item that we've discussed, I think, in the past is, to Avery's suggestion, is actually to break out the document. So when we post it, allow people to download just the executive summary or just the chapter with the recommendations or just the chapter with the annexes. And at the same time, also, of course, also offer the integrated version and indicate then with each of those sections how many pages people are actually downloading. So they have an idea as well beforehand. What they're getting and how many pages it is, so they can make a informed decision on which of the elements they want to download beforehand.
Yeah, so we can then work on that. Maybe that's one of the things. As chair, I've been staying away from making kind of the formal, any kind of formal comments, and leaving the registry comments to David. Maybe one thing I can work with you is to try to see if we can make some of those. See if we can make the executive summary a little shorter, and maybe even table format. But I'm not sure that will make it shorter. That might make it longer. But we can work on that. We want to go to the next comment. That I don't know if it's Avery's next comment or if it's Paul or James.
So this is Marika. So basically, I've organized the comments basically on the order of the document. So it'll be mixed. But the next comment is also from Avery in relation to recommendation 7. What can the end result of a PDP be on page 7 of the draft final report? Avery, do you want to?
Yeah, let me get there. Page 7. Okay.
Is this the comment that it could be a null set, or is that later?
I don't know.
This basically, there's one sentence in there that says, some members of the community might be surprised to learn that there are more potential outcomes of the PDP process than just the formation of consensus policies. And the comment that Avery makes is, does the phrase really add anything? Seems a little less formal than the rest of the document.
Right. Yeah, that was an editorial, basically. I mean, it was a folksy sort of, some people may be surprised, and I was basically just sort of saying that sentence didn't seem to add anything and seemed out of character with a lot of the rest of the document, that's all.
And just to add, indeed, it also add this phrase of, might want to mention that this includes a null recommendation.
Right. Right, that basically... What I think that's trying to say, I never quite found the page in front of me, is that, because I can't see the page numbers because they're little, I have to open it up. That basically what we're saying is that the result can be no recommendation, and that's a perfectly fine result. And so those were the two different comments that I had there. And I think that's kind of what you were saying, but it's just slightly different. And I just thought the extra sentence, it was a different character than others. It was a much folksier kind of not executive summary type of statement, that's all. And I know I put things like that in the middle of things I write all the time because they make it easier to write, but then I end up taking them out because.
Yeah, I think that's a good comment, especially for the executive summary. If we want to keep something like that in the main body, that's fine. We could discuss that. But I agree on an executive summary. As we look to make things shorter, we could take out some of the words or the kind of colloquialisms like that. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. For the discussion now, can we maybe just pretend that this is not the executive summary, because I think most people have actually made the comments on the recommendations here in this part of the document. So I agree that for the executive summary, we can make it shorter or just, put some of the key recommendations. But for the discussion now, if we can, just focus on the language that we want to have in the recommendation, and then, when I update the report, I'll make sure that this is, the language that comes in the real recommendation, the complete recommendation, and that, we can adapt that in the executive summary, but that we don't mix those two up, because otherwise we need to cover everything twice, basically. So, people can just say clearly what they want from this recommendation so I can make the right change.
Right. My recommendation, I guess, on the null would be the next sentence, acceptable comments include development of best practices, recommendations to other supporting organizations for future development, a recommendation, we won't want to call it the null set, but basically... a conclusion that no recommendations are necessary, et cetera. And that's the kind of thing that I thought, because you could have a PDP that looks at the issue and says, nope, everything's fine, leave it as it is, just keep going.
Yep. I think that's right. Yeah, let's not use the term null set, as you said, or null recommendation.
Exactly. That was you know, an old logician talking. I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. All right. Rick, is your hand?
Rick, and one clarification. Are people also happy then to remove that sentence on the, where does it start?
Yeah, I wasn't talking about getting rid of the whole sentence, just the first phrase. So you might want to just have, there are more potential outcomes of the PDP process than just.
Okay.
That's right. Correct.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, let's move through.
So next one is also from Avery in relation to recommendation 12 on the role of workshops and information gathering events on page.
Right. This one may have just been a timing wording issue, but it kind of looks like we're saying workshops are important and there should be one, but then taking into account that workshops really only happen, I mean, unless we decide to start having online workshops more and more, workshops only happen with face-to-face meetings. So maybe it was just something in the wording, but it looks like we kind of should have a workshop before we actually start a PDP, and I didn't know that that's what we actually wanted to say.
So I think we did. So we didn't say that it had to be face to face. So I think that's an important issue to make it clear that the workshop doesn't have to be face to face. But I do believe we said that it was a good recommendation. We didn't say it was a best practice. We didn't say it had to do it, but it was. I think we did it in a couple circumstances before that. It was kind of one of those things that we thought would be a good idea. So again, we can clarify that we don't necessarily mean face to face because I think that's important. And it wasn't to slow things down necessarily, but it was more of a kind of a fact finding that we discussed early on. Alan?
Yeah, I recall this well, and I don't know whether we meant face to face. We were certainly talking about face to face because I remember making the comment that although this thought was viewed as something new, I can't remember a PDP in my history where we didn't hold at least one workshop somewhere along the way before the PDP was initiated. That it just seems to be the normal course of events. By the time something rises to the importance of perhaps warranting a PDP, someone has almost surely done a workshop at an ICANN meeting prior to it. So that is what we were talking about. Whether we want to say it or not is a different issue.
Okay. I was just taking notes on that. So Aubrey, if we made some of those clarifications, is that? Yep. Okay.
Yeah, you could definitely put in a clause such a workshop, you know, either online or in a face-to-face meeting, as a clause. Of course, I talked about taking words out, and here I am suggesting putting words in, but something like that would certainly. And as I say, it was probably just my ignorance in reading. I saw a workshop, and I said, well, those are always face-to-face, and, you know, we talk about PDPs taking too long, and I've talked about being against necessarily having a fast track, but definitely it should be possible to accelerate through some of the steps, even if you follow all the steps. And so saying something like it could be an online workshop would help. Maybe it's just my ignorance, as I say.
Okay. All right. We can definitely make those clarifications.
So, this is Rick, so just to confirm, we would like to add then following, in addition, the PDP working recommended the GGSO Council should consider requiring such a workshop online or face-to-face on a specific issue during da-na-na-na-na. Did I get that right?
That's what I was saying.
Yep. Again, Marika, we may shorten these responses so that they don't have to necessarily be in full complete sentences or paragraph form. So as long as you got the concept down, I think we'll move on. And I don't want to worry about exact wording for everything at this point. Does that make sense?
Sure.
This is Marika. It would help to give me some guidance so we don't have to go through this whole process again.
No, I understand that, but I think one of the things I want to do, again, is not necessarily is to kind of shorten these and maybe not even full sentences. But, all right.
But for the executive summary, you mean? I guess there's still going to be an annex that will have the complete language of the recommendation and intent or explanation or whatever is linked to it.
Yeah, you're right. Yep.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay, next one. Let's see.
Next one is recommendation 13 on impact analysis, also from Avery.
Right. And just a note on the previous comment I had made in terms of see recommendation 11 as an answer to 9, efficiency and flexibility during planning. I hadn't understood how recommendation 11 applied to that, and that just confused me. So I just said I didn't understand that one, that answer. Okay. Oh, yeah. Basically, here we were just, again, it's one of the things we're listing examples of impact analysis that could include, and one of the things that has been suggested various times over the years but rarely taken in was that one should consider on some of these things whether it's privacy issues or freedom of expression issues or just call it under the rubric of human rights impact would be a reasonable thing to add to this, though, you know, we could find other wording, but that was my recommendation there, to just include human rights impact under the list of things that could be considered as prior impact analysis.
Okay. What page is that on again? I somehow missed that.
It's line 225 through 231. I find the lines easier than the page numbers. Page numbers are too tiny.
This is Marika. I don't think the page numbers or the line numbers add up, because if we're talking about recommendation 13, that's on page 9, and on the document on the screen, it's actually in lines 395 to 399. I'm not really sure where that difference comes from.
I started looking at your document itself as opposed to what's on the screen.
Okay.
I don't know how, you know, why the mix-up is in the numbers,
okay,
but
sorry.
I've noticed as well in the version that Paul and James sent that there the line numbers don't add up either to the version, so I'm not really sure what...
that's weird.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. But if we look at the screen, it's on page 9, line 394 to 399.
Is there, Avery, and this is just a question, is there another word you can use instead of human rights, but, like, would that be considered social impact or... when people tend to use human rights, it sometimes causes...
definitely. I mean, certainly causes the Chinese and Russians agita every time someone says human rights. I wouldn't think that it had that kind of impact inside ICANN. But anyway, perhaps you could just say rights impact, that you know, leave out the human rights. That broadens it, but nonetheless is probably okay. Because you're talking about privacy rights, you're talking about, you know, expression rights, which may be an issue, which are both subtitles of human rights. But, hey, sure, I think leaving out rights, since it's only humans that have rights, unless, of course, the Supreme Court says corporations do, too. But
right, okay, so let's do that. And it also would have intellectual property would be considered as part of rights, too. It's that it could be read that kind of broad.
Right, which is fine. I mean, basically, there should be a rights analysis, and you know, if it's an intellectual property right, it should be explored.
Okay, James.
For the CSG, which of course I can.
thanks, Jeff. James speaking. Not that I disagree with this idea. I'm concerned that it starts us down a slippery slope, and this impact analysis gets very long. As we try to account for all possible facets of online life and business and society that could be impacted by a PDP. And I'm concerned that, you know, everyone will read into it what they want to read into it. And of course, that it would cause to conduct such an analysis would cause someone to want to take assessments of what human rights exist in the status quo before we, you know, we could understand how a PDP would impact them. Just to kind of put this out there as a potential alternative that I think captures what we want for language would be to, I notice what we have currently almost but not quite maps to some of the things that are listed in ICANN's mission and in the AOC, which is, you know, preserving the civilian security of the DNS, a single, you know, exclusive and globally resolvable route, you know, maintaining competition, consumer trust, consumer choice, and then something that kind of encapsulates, I think, what Aubrey is saying. I think if we were to maybe look for guidance from the ICANN bylaws or mission statement or possibly an AOC, we might be able to boil this down into, like, four general categories that wouldn't necessarily introduce curveballs into this recommendation.
Sorry, what were those four categories?
Oh, I don't know. I was shooting from memory, but I think one is the stability and security of the DNS. Another one was, you know, consumer trust, consumer confidence. I think it's consumer trust, and then a competitive marketplace, and then another one was probably a unwieldy topic that describes human and property rights. You know, so I'm just trying to think if we can look to some other documents for guidance on this recommendation rather than invent it here, we might save ourselves a lot of trouble down the road. So just a proposal.
Okay. Aubrey, you have your hand raised?
Just a quick comment. I have no objection to finding agreed-upon text that one can substitute for us creating our own, though I would hesitate to think of human rights as throwing a curveball into the work. Thanks.
Okay. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Actually, an unrelated comment, but relating to Aubrey's previous comment on this C recommendation 11, where it's linked to, I just realized that probably something got screwed up in the numbering, and that should actually say C recommendation 12. So I'll check that back and make sure to clear that up in the next version.
Okay. James, can you find that language that was used in the AOC and just kind of circulate that as to the categories, and then Aubrey can make sure that she can check to see if she's comfortable that her concerns or human rights would be included in that list?
Yeah, I'll take a swing at that. I think it's section 2 through 8 of the AOC is pretty good list, but I don't know that it includes something that addresses Aubrey's concerns. So I think we'll need to kind of just massage some of those or maybe add something in there, but I just didn't want us to create something from whole cloth when we didn't have to. Thanks.
Okay, I think that makes sense to the extent the language is there and Aubrey's comfortable with that. Let's proceed with that. Okay, so now we're on recommendation 14. Again, I'm just reading along with you all. So this is, has this become a moot point? So Aubrey, you want to?
Okay, let me look at my comment. I'd gone off to look at AOC work.
Oh, it's on priority, and I
okay, this was talking about at the time this was written that the council was in this whole, you know, massive prioritization exercise. Now I understand from listening and reading the council that while you still care about prioritization, the process, the ongoing GNSO council prioritization activity is not going on in the same way it was that it was written. So this rings like a historical statement that may be a moot point and no longer applies. Yes, you guys are still looking at prioritization, but you don't have a prioritization activity in the same way you did when this was done. In fact, I'm not sure I could talk to any three counselors and get the same idea on how you guys are treating prioritization at the moment.
Yeah, I think what if we just ended it at the first sentence and didn't even have the second sentence in there?
Works for me. And the other point I was making is that, and I've made this in a couple venues at the moment, is I understand and totally appreciate and think it's necessary for the staff to say, oops, we're not sure how we would do that. But I think instead of coming out with statements like, it can't be done, or whatever, staff has to basically give concrete, you know, incremental costs or something. There's a fine line between staff giving a realistic projection of if they can do something, when they can do something, and what the incremental cost of bringing somebody else in or of what they would need to delay to use the talent, and to give a real analysis of the labor impact is something that is needed. But there's a fine line between that and sort of saying, we can't do this.
Yeah, let me
the second that they get to the we can't do this, that becomes a control upon what policy can and can't be done based upon how they budgeted and managed their activities, and that becomes problematic. And so it's that fine line I'm worried about.
Yeah, let me catch people up that weren't maybe didn't listen to the council call. So we were discussing, the council was discussing an item that was raised by the board in a resolution at the Cartagena meeting, and said the board said that the genus of council should take up this issue on consumer trust, competition, can't remember exactly all the words it was, but then the council didn't really know what that meant and wanted some clarification on it. Bruce Tonkin wrote a long email on what he believed the board was looking for, and during the discussion, Liz Gassner put a comment on Adobe basically saying staff needs to know which item or which items the GNSO was going to put on hold so that staff could have the resources to work on this particular item that the board gave to the council. And I think many, including myself, had sort of a visceral reaction to that, basically saying, wait a minute, the board, without consulting us, has given us an assignment that we didn't ask for, we didn't necessarily want, and now staff is saying not only is the board saying you, the council, have to do that, but now staff is saying we have to do it and we have to put something else that we actually want to do on hold. And so that didn't really, to many people, that was not a good message to deliver to the council kind of that abruptly. And, you know, there's been some discussion back and forth on a number of different lists, you know, kind of in line of what Aubrey's saying. You know, you need to know the opportunity cost. You need to know, you know, what the incremental cost is of working on an item. Part of my issue also is that we don't necessarily know if ICANN policy staff is being redirected on other projects that aren't necessarily related to GNSO activity. Yeah, that's not something that's necessarily shared with us. So to the extent that some staff has been assigned to work on other things, you know, I know Margie works on some board items, and that may be true of other policy staff. To the extent that they are put on those, we have no say in that, nor do we have insight into that. So it's not really, my comment is it's not really appropriate to tell us we have to put one of our things on hold when we don't know what other things could be put on hold. So that's a long discussion item, but essentially, I think you're right, Aubrey. As far as, you know, we need to have that information in order to make a point or to make an assessment. Alan?
Yeah, a couple of things. My reaction when Liz made that comment, and it was made verbally in addition to on Adobe, I had two completely different reactions. I applauded the fact that it was being raised, that staff resources are a major issue and we need to focus on it, the global we. And I was quite offended that a board issue, because it was raised, suddenly becomes more important than other issues, and it may or may not be, depending on the actual details. So I was very much of two minds. In the case of this recommendation, dropping the second sentence fixes it somewhat, but it's essentially making a recommendation that we've already talked about at great length and don't know how to do. And I have some problem with making a recommendation that we know doesn't have an answer that we've been able to figure out, even though we've worked on it a lot. So I think we need to do something here, but I'm not quite sure what the something is.
Well, it's always possible that we could then we can reflect, obviously, the discussion in the subsequent part of the paper. But we could also push this off and basically say, we were in our discussion, say we were counting on the GNSO Council's prioritization activity to kind of produce something. It didn't, and maybe this is one of the items for the a future work for the standing committee that may be set up by the time our final report comes out, we don't have to answer it in our report.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to say somewhere in the report that resources are a critical issue, and it's a factor the council needs to factor in when making decisions. But I'm not sure it's a recommendation. As we're going on, I'm convincing myself I'm not sure it's a recommendation, but saying it's an issue that must be factored in, but not a step, as it were.
Mm. Okay, Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika, and we've discussed it before as well, and I don't know if it needs to be better reflected in this recommendation, but I think it's important to recognize as well that it's actually not PDPs that are the main issue. It's mainly all of the other work that's creating the resource issue, because at the moment I think we only have two actual PDPs going on, and they are struggling getting their work done because of all the other things that are happening and drawing away resources from those efforts. So I don't know if that's something that should be captured here or is clear enough, but I don't know either if it would be a solution just to have a prioritization effort focused on PDPs as such, because I'm not really sure how much that would help the overall issue.
No, I support that. The GNSO and ALAC, for that matter, could be completely fully occupied not doing any policy work. when you consider the AOC projects and the other board-mandated things and the nominating committee and all the other activities that people participate in, not to mention all the GNSO reorg stuff, who has time for policy?
Aubrey.
Yeah. I think
not Aubrey. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that Aubrey has time for policy. I meant to call her.
That's quite all right. I'm quite used to it. I think that the prioritization problem, and it goes beyond this, and so I think it's worth just saying something needs to be done. The prioritization problem really can't work except inside a system where you control the priority of all the resources you're doing the prioritization of. As long as there's some undefined set of controls that can say, well, we think this is important because, but it's not a GNSO activity, therefore it bumps, the time of a person, or however that works, which is, of course, not transparent to the GNSO, there's no way for them to do it. So, you can't manage a resource you don't own. You can't manage a resource you can't see completely. So until you've resolved that issue, the staff priority time becomes a real sort of undefined variable in all of this, and you've got a problem. So, yes, something needs to be done. I'm not sure that it's a PDP recommendation, so I think I pretty much endorse, whether it's a recommendation or not, that, that defining a PDP has to be done with full knowledge of resource availability, and leave it at that is a recommendation of this group, is that, the council to manage resources has to know what resources it has and how they're being deployed, and leave that as the recommendation of this group.
What does everyone think about that, what Aubrey just said about the recommendation being kind of changed into, they should be aware, but not having any more than that? I kind of think that makes sense. I mean, I think that in light of the fact that the prioritization activity didn't really produce anything. Okay.
This is Rick, can you just clarify how you would like this recommendation changed? Because I didn't completely catch what Avery meant.
Avery, you want to just,
Okay, the PDP work team believes that the GNSO Council should take into account full resource availability, both staff and volunteer, in deciding upon the initiation of a new PDP. It's an awkward sentence because I was making it up as I went along. So it's not saying they should prioritize PDPs, but it's basically focusing on, in deciding on a PDP, the GNSO needs to take full account of available resources, staff and volunteer, in making its decision. That's another way to say it.
Does that help, Marika?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay. Let's move on then. Let's see, where are we?
Next one is recommendation 15, also sort of related to this issue.
Yeah, Jeff, before we go to Alan, before we go on, just one comment. As we talk about this, it dawns on me, I cannot imagine a scenario where the GNSO wanted to do something and the staff come back and say, yeah, we have spare time, people are sitting around doing nothing, so this is just perfect. Aren't we always going to be in a position where we're fully loaded? So I just think as we word this, we need to phrase it carefully.
Yeah, and this is Rick, if I can add something to that, because one of the challenges that we've seen as well is it's not so much finding resources for new activities. The problem is that the new activities draw away the resources from ongoing or existing activities, because for some reason people want to jump on the next new thing or maybe see that some of those other efforts are taking a long time and a lot of discussion going on, or it's not really top of their priority list anymore. So a bigger problem I see in practice is that new efforts just draw away from existing activities.
Yeah, my reference was mainly to staff time, but you're right.
Yeah, James?
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what Marika was saying. I think that we're very good at adding items on a to-do list but we don't really have a clean or systematic way of getting items off the to-do list. They always seem to kind of linger out there as open issues, and I think that we have to realize that goes hat in hand with the resource prioritization issues that we've encountered, because until you have a way of completely closing down an issue, you really should be have some acknowledgement of that when initiating a new issue, that it's going to be a drain on that. And we've seen PDPs, for example, where we start off with a good number of folks, and then we're halfway to three-quarters of the way through the process, and some new interesting topic comes up, and then it's almost like you can hear the footsteps as everybody rushes to the next PDP.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that, and certainly in this group we had much better participation much earlier on, you guys have all stuck through it.
Well, so what's needed is a commitment at all levels, from individual volunteers all the way up to the board, to closing down issues before taking on new ones, because recognizing that the needs will always be infinite and the resources will always be finite.
Yes. Does anyone disagree with that?
I don't see how we can.
Kind of like that.
Like any kind of everyone's lifestyle right now.
We could propose the reverse, but I don't think it maps to reality.
You have to stay with it.
The problem is, as these things go on, they actually become work.
Yeah, but we stick with them.
Some of us do.
Okay. Moving on then. And then I actually have to step away. I can go for maybe another 10, 15 minutes. So I think we might end this call up a little bit earlier unless anybody wants to, has an urge to stay on longer. But let's see how far we can get. So we are on, if I'm reading correctly, are we on page 11, recommendation 18?
No, we're on page 10, recommendation 15 in relation to fast track.
Yes, sorry, we kind of went backwards and, okay, gotcha. All right, so this is on the, as you said, the fast track, and Avery's comment, you want to go over that?
Okay, yeah, I guess, and I was looking at outstanding issues. In terms of that, we don't seem to have an agreement on a fast track, and I think part of the problem is with that is when you look at a fast track, what step do you want to take out as a general fast track? And I think we've largely come to a viewpoint that there's no steps that you can remove and still have a well-formed PDP, a proper and due PDP. However, and this is the point I was trying to get to, in each of these categories, in each of these things, there may be faster ways to do the work. And one of the recommendations we might make is that for a faster PDP, have a narrower issue. In other words, if you have a PDP with 12 issues, it's going to take you, well, not quite, it's not quite multiplicative. It's not going to take you necessarily 12 times as long. It might take you logarithmically more. But if you have only one narrow-pointed issue, then each of these steps should be shorter. And so if we're making a recommendation on ways to accelerate, so not form a fast-track PDP, but make recommendations somewhere on ways in which the PDP process can be sped up. And so that's the kind of recommendation I'm trying to make there is, and you know, I certainly didn't go so far as to craft language, but trying to jump into this, yes, there's a need to do something faster issue, but, you know, a PDP is a PDP and you can't skip steps, sort of, you know, thought, how do you then resolve that? And you resolve that by narrow issues and finding ways to move through the process quicker, because it's narrower.
Okay, Alan and James.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's Alan. I think this discussion here is exactly at odds with our previous one, and it shows perhaps the difficulty that we have. I think we calculated at one point that the shortest possible elapsed time for a PDP, if everything goes as smoothly as possible, is about 9 months. There's a certain commitment that it takes, a certain amount of work that it takes to go through that process, even if it's a slam-dunk, easy one. And I think what we were really getting at when we were talking about this, and every time we've talked about it, we said, let's defer it to later, but what we're talking about is something that will require less elapsed time and less human resources. And no matter how simple we make it and how narrow the scope is, there's still a significant resource required in going through each of the steps. And certainly my interest in pushing this, and I have, is to find something that has less elapsed time and less resources. And narrowing the scope, I don't think, does that. There's a certain amount of critical mass of work that has to be done no matter how easy the situation is. And the question is are there steps that can be bypassed and the whole process made faster and easier for the people involved? So I don't think we can pursue the kind of thing that Avery says and still, you know, try to minimize resources that are being used on things that don't warrant the effort. Thank you.
Okay, James?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. James speaking. I just wanted to lend my support for something that Avery said that I felt was important and probably bears repetition. The idea that an urgent or fast-track PDP contains all of the elements of the standard or molasses PDP but we look for ways to expedite the different steps. I'm coming off of one AOC review team and beginning another one, and one of the things that struck me was how much more productive folks can be when there are representatives from each of the various SOs and ACs, and they meet, you know, in face-to-face environment and have a hit list of different things that they go down, and they have staff support there as well. So one of the ideas might be to try to examine ways to compress everything that doesn't have a time frame spelled out in the PDP process. So obviously, like, public comment periods and things like that wouldn't work. But I just wanted to point out that I like the path that Aubrey is on with keeping all of the required elements of the standard PDP, but exploring ways to compress the timeline of those things that do not have schedules prescribed in the bylaws.
Yeah, so I definitely think that those are some good ideas. My problem now is that I think that we've discussed this a number of times, and I'm not sure we have any kind of agreed-upon approach that's been kind of unanimous consensus has in this group. I mean, we certainly can put forth the discussion that we've had on it, but I'm not sure we have enough to make a recommendation. Anybody, you know, so you got Aubrey making one kind of statement, and you know, certainly there are points that I think that people agree on, but I think in order to get our work done, I think we have to kind of just say we had the discussion, you know, the discussion, not an executive summary, but maybe we take it out of the executive summary, or except to say that there's no recommendation from the group on this. But in the discussion, say we had the discussion, some good ideas emerged, but this is really work that's required for another this may be required if the council or the community believes that, you know, there's a definite need. Because I don't think, you know, remembering back to our discussions and even something that James just said, I'm not sure there's, within this group, there's definitely a recognized need that we have to have a faster track. As Marika has pointed out in the past, you know, I think the term of PDPs have shrunk in some recent years as opposed to 3, 4, or 5 years ago when it was a very long time. So, you know, I'm not sure we all agree as a group, and I could be wrong, and let me know. I'm not sure we all agree as a group that there is a definitive need for a fast track. So, Aubrey and then Alan?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that in agreeing with you, that had been my first recommendation, that if we don't have consensus on this, we do not make a recommendation on it. I think the idea of including a discussion of is there a need, and if there is a need, is it a need to do things quickly or for a specifically new process, et cetera, and to develop that conversation in either an addendum or the companion document or the longer document is a good idea. But I don't think we have consensus and agreement, so I agree.
Okay. Alan?
Yeah, I certainly support that. However, I put my hand up on another issue. It dawned on me as James was talking that I think he has hit the nail right on the head. If we want to do things fast, we need resources. You need representation from all groups. Face-to-face meetings are infinitely better than teleconferences, and lots of staff support and external support and things like that. You know, the model that's being used for the AOC, if we could follow it for PDPs, we would implicitly have fast-track PDPs. We'd get a lot more work done, and it would come to closure a lot quicker. I don't think it's realistic to expect that.
No, it'd be so expensive.
but I think, James, you've identified exactly what the problem is. We're trying to do these things using a methodology which is somewhat flawed. You know, we have conversations with only half the people there. No one has time to do the work in between. It's not rated as high enough to really put real resources into it. We can't afford any face-to-face meetings. And when we actually come face-to-face, we don't have the time to do it. We couldn't set it up better to be slow.
Other than that, everything's great.
That's right.
Okay. Let's Okay, I'm just looking to see how much time we have left. What's moving on, I guess, Marika, what's the next overall issue, or should we, is this a good place to stop?
This, Marika, as you want, the next one is Recommendation 16, flexibility when launching a policy development process. I can comment on, because Avery asked the question, where the metrics have been collected that show the histories of these times. And just to note that I did do a table, and actually should probably update it again, where I looked at the time frames of the different PDPs that have taken place in the past, like from the request of an issues report to board vote, and you can see there quite clearly, I think, contrasting to what Jeff actually said, that PDPs in the past actually would move relatively fast, I think, you know, partly due to resources, some of them as well being very, very narrowly defined issues, but where you see a growing trend in the more recent PDPs of, you know, needing much more time, I think partly due to, you know, lack of resources, but also some of the issues being very complex and very controversial, so needing more time. I think, and we need to look back, but I think the average would come down to a year, basically, from start to finish, with some, of course, taking much longer and some taking a little bit shorter. But I'm happy if people are interested to update a document and circulate it again.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea to update that for this report. James?
Hi, Jeff. Just very quickly, Paul and I had a quick comment here, and I just wanted to explain it. Hopefully it's very brief. You know, this recommendation could have been read in such a way that any person or entity within the ICANN community could request the deferral of a PDP, and so I think that we wanted to tighten that up to say a voting council member. So hopefully that's clear and non-controversial, but I may be missing something.
I think that's a helpful clarification. Let me ask Alan, I mean, or Avery, has anyone who's not a voting council member ever asked the council to defer a PDP or defer anything, and what has the council reaction to that been?
There was at least one case where I did it and it was deferred.
So should it just be council member and leave it at that, or James, would that be okay, or do you need the voting aspect?
Well, you know, I kind of felt that that was an important part, but won't let you what Avery feels about.
I actually think that the change to voting council member is a good one. I think that, but normally it's not just I want it. It's voting council member on behalf of their stakeholder group. Perhaps it's or stakeholder group or constituency. I would prefer just on behalf of their stakeholder group. You know, doing it. I think that if someone like, you know, Alan, who is such an integral part of the council, you know, even though he's a non-voting member, asks, you know, certainly a voting council member would endorse it. So that's not a big deal. But I think extending that could get problematic. So basically, I'm agreeing here. I also, while talking, wanted to just comment on one of the other things I said regarding the times. And I'm just asking, is to what degree do the times that things take need to be included in the bylaws? And is it possible to just have the bylaws refer to times will be defined in the procedures, giving more flexibility in terms of things like acceleration, et cetera? But anyhow, thanks.
Yeah, I think that may need to be considered kind of on a case by case, because I think there may be some time frames that are important for, you know, consensus policies for contracted parties. I'm not sure that there's going to be a uniform answer to that, to basically say every time frame is in the rules of procedure. So, well, I think it's an interesting question, that one that kind of needs to take back. And James, I think you should take that back, and I'll ask David as well. From the registries to see if there's any sensitivities there. On the voting council members, two things. I think let's let's leave the language in there. It's interesting that the language says anyone may request it. It doesn't say that it should be granted. I don't know if that was intentionally, we intentionally left that out, or, you know, we want to get a little more specific on that. Right, it says anyone may request it, and Alan could always request it as a non-voting member. The next sentence doesn't say, you know, that we should go along with that request. So, Alan and then Avery?
A couple of things. In terms of the wording, I'm happy with it. You should note, by the way, that I'm not a non-voting council member. I'm not, as a liaison, I am not a council member, according to the bylaw definitions. So changing it for voting or non-voting doesn't alter it. You're right that it doesn't say it has to be approved, but it does say follow codify the current practice, and the current practice is the council does defer if a request is made. So it's implicit, if you know what the current practice is, that it will be accepted. However, I support the change. Whether a non-voting member or a non-member making the request will be honored will depend on to what extent council is feeling both generous and feels that this is a person they want to listen to. Over the years, that's varied in terms of me. Sometimes I've been listened to, sometimes I've been blatantly ignored. But I don't think you can widen it in this kind of level without opening it up to things that we probably don't want.
Okay, let me go to Marika and then Avery.
Yeah, this is Marika. On the timeline issue, I just quickly checked to the proposed bylaw language as it currently stands. I think the only time frames that are actually included there for now are the duration of the public comment period. I think all the other elements are proposed to be included in the procedure manual. So that's something for now everyone to review, whether people indeed are comfortable with it, if more things need to be moved to the procedure manual or more things to the bylaws. But just to clarify that, you know, as it currently stands or as it's been proposed, there are very few time frames in the actual bylaws. And I wanted to make another point, but just to clarify then, so on this one, are people happy with the addition that Avery proposed that it should be voting council member on behalf of their constituency and or stakeholder group?
No,
that is the current practice.
Yeah, I think in order to I'm trying to gather my thoughts on that, you know, each council member is supposed to be acting on behalf of their groups anyway. I think it's language that may add some. I mean, I could see that that's the type of language that a Marilyn or others would have problems with. Although that's, you know, the way we think of it is that they should have.
The different stakeholder groups have different rules to what extent their councillors are directed or not. I don't think we can impose on them and put that rule in.
I think, Alan, you said it better than I could, but let me let Avery address that.
Yeah. I'm just talking about the current practice, that even the NCSG, which is probably the least binding of the the stakeholder group on its counselors, that request is specifically made. You know, there was an example at a recent meeting where one person wanted to make a request to delay something, but couldn't get the rest of the council members to agree to it, which the rest of the council members are essentially the core of the policy group, and therefore didn't. And it's the one place where, and just the practice has always been that it's not that I want to delay it, it's that my stakeholder group and or constituency needs more time statement. So whether you want to use the on behalf of, or you want to give a standard reason, and so therefore, you know, you're not saying that the stakeholder group has to make a prior decision, however the stakeholder group does that, but that the reason for doing this delay is because we need more time in the stakeholder group or constituency. I'm just saying that's always been the practice. Everyone, as far as I know, both from when I was in the council and since then listening to the meetings, has always said, my group needs more time on this. So just that is the current practice if we want to codify the current practice. Thanks.
Yeah, I think you're right, Aubrey, to an extent, but nobody's ever asked, you know, like, for example, on this last call, Christina said that she thought, or she said that her group needed more time on the RAP motion. You know, whether her group actually needed more time or whether her group gave her instructions to say that or whether she did that on her own, who knows? And frankly, it's not something that the council really inquires about. I'm always afraid of putting in language that can be challenged by somebody, you know, which kind of begs a question that nobody really necessarily wants to ask. You know, so, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think that if you just left it out as voting council members and then we find out later there's a problem that they never had their support, I would expect the stakeholder group to kind of use its own procedures to remove the council member or to admonish the council member or do something like that. I would just hate for someone, like, let's say, last example, someone from the IPC then says they want a deferral because they, you know, the group needs more time. You know, if someone were to say, well, Christina, did your group really need more time? Did you check with your group? Did you do this, and this? I mean, it almost seems like we're kind of begging some more questions that I don't know. So Aubrey, you have a response?
Oh, sorry, I just left my hand up. No, obviously we have different opinions on it, so I'm not sure. I'll add. I don't think one needs to check. I think one is doing it. I don't think that everything every counselor says in the meeting is always at the behest of their stakeholder group. People give their own opinions on things that they haven't been given instructions. I'm sure in the contracted party's house, not every utterance made by its counselors has prior approval of the stakeholder group. But so you say, well, I think and I believe and things like that. I think in this case, you're asking them to make the declaration on behalf of their stakeholder group. You're not saying anybody gets to check it because that's internal to the stakeholder group. The stakeholder group hears it. The stakeholder group chair who's listening to the meeting and, you know, perhaps even chatting with them goes, what do you mean? And you know, we had enough time. We already said what we were going to say. Why are you doing this? And so saying that they have to do it on behalf of them, but, you know, you're right. Somebody could challenge it, and then the answer is it's between me and my stakeholder group, you know, whether this is a true statement. But they're still making the statement that they're doing it on behalf of that as opposed to just, I didn't get around to reading it yet, so folks, you know, let's delay it.
All right, let's put the change that Aubrey and others have discussed in there, and if you know we could see how people feel about it. I think this is a good place to stop and start up again on Thursday. If anyone have any objections to that? Okay, and remember, if you haven't gotten your comments in, you know, try to get it in now today. So that Marika is continuing to update it, but at some point very soon she's going to put out the next draft. And on the next draft, really, the next draft for review should really be on readability, grammar, you know, maybe a couple formatting things, but hopefully not on the substance. So that's the goal, so we can get it out. You know, we said we wanted to get it out February 1st. If we get it out by mid, you know, by the second week of February, we're still good. As far as, you know, having it for discussion at the San Francisco meeting. Any other questions? Comments? Great. I'll talk to you in a couple of days on Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.